We are again, my friend, with another exciting edition of Tallahassee Talks with Danny Bedrosian joining us in the second hour. What an amazing individual. I've got Jerome Gaines, Kevin Peters in the first hour talking about our Tallahassee Prepared promotion, and our good friend Russell Dawes with Tallahassee Museum. He's going to tell us about the Swamp Stomp, so stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widden Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done. Widden Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widden Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widden Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widden Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widden's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Widden Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widden's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widden Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widden is known for taking care of business. Widden Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Don't forget, shiver past. Yes, my friend, it is the mid of summer. Midsummer's dream, you might say, or for some of you, it's a nightmare dealing with heat and humidity if you have to work outdoors all day. I look at some of you folks out there on the road crews and the tree trimming guys and the utility folks. I mean, Lord. The superheroes, in my mind, who brave this thing. And let's stop for a moment and realize that the invention of air conditioning... When was that, Carl? Look that up. Wasn't that long ago in world history, revolutionized the South. Many historians have said that had it not been for this remarkable invention, much of the Southland would have been left unpopulated. But here we are. And in our own little tally town, go back and look at the map of the mid-1800s. This came by way of one of my Facebook friends who pointed this out. It's a map many of you may be familiar with, rather meticulously restored and done so by this remarkable company. Let's see if I can read this because it's in micro print here. But it's basically, it was originally published by Norris Wells and Company back in, this says 18, I can't tell if that's, I think that's 1835. Anyway, Tallahassee, the state capital of Florida, with notations. And when you look at this, what was in fact a drawing then that was printed for the sake of all, you see this portrayal, this picture, this presentation of Tallahassee at the time, in its day, remarkably different, of course, but noticeably concentrated around the center, which was the capital of Florida. Kind of all makes sense, doesn't it? Many of the same streets, most of those that you see named there in this map, are still in existence, right? You know, Pensacola, Virginia, Georgia, Adams, all of these that come from our very beginnings. And there is on the western side, the Florida State University in one single building there at the end of what would be College Avenue running up to Call Street. Remarkable, and a reminder here of my point that we live in a time when Tallahassee once again is going through a period of great advancement, a great amount of change. Michael Sheridan was here recently and talked about the old and the new Tallahassee. That's a remarkable thing when you consider, and Mike Sheridan can speak to that. He was getting started back in the mid-80s with his company, grew that business to a formidable enterprise. I think they're billing out at something like $20, $21 million a year. So they've done well for themselves, as have many. And those contributions to our economic landscape certainly are in keeping with the changes in the physical landscape. When you look at this map, again, mid-1800s, all the way up to this present time, when we see changes in social structure, I think. So if you have the economic changes, you have the, we'll call it structural changes, meaning the physical layout of this town, and all of that, all that that means, the infrastructure, you know, the buildings, all of that that has come about, let's say, in the last 150 years or so. Now we come to a time when I think there is a restating of who we are. And it's a theme that you will hear me preach at you often, because I think it bears repeating, frankly. I think if you are not, if you and I are not paying attention to this new Tallahassee that Mike Sheridan's talking about, and many are talking about, we may find ourselves disenfranchised. We may find ourselves working out of an old way of thinking. And you find it even in the current political climate. Look at the candidates that have stepped up for these significant offices: mayor, city, county commissioner, school board, right? These are not some of the old thinkers. These are folks who are arguably part of this new way of looking at Tallahassee. Tallahassee as a player on that world stage. Tallahassee as inclusive. Tallahassee as expansive. Looking at innovation as our friend. Looking to explore ways in which we can solve problems, but also the ways in which we can create opportunities for many who otherwise have been kind of relegated to the other side. Okay, so for some, this old Tallahassee is confined to a few zip codes, and that there's a sharp demarcation between those who are part of the influential, the rank and file, who are contributing, who are pulling the levers and the chains, making critical decisions, and then there are the rest of us, the people who just kind of work from day to day doing our thing. Well, the message that I'm getting from a lot of these, we'll call them the new thinkers and new leaders, and not necessarily in their 30s, some older, are really that message being that we're really at a point where we can do so much more for one another. We can offer so much more to the world landscape, the worldscape, in technology, in science, yes, in art, in entertainment, yes, and in social innovation. I mean, one of the questions I ask is, why is it that we don't see more cross-participation among ethnic, racial, economic groupings? If we intend to remain in this old way of thinking, this old Tallahassee, we're going to see perhaps a kind of, a step back. At the very least, a sort of stalemate, where we aren't able to move forward in ways that are better for all of us, and especially our children. You know, the cry for attracting and retaining the creative class, that's been going on for a number of years. Well, the creative class is not attracted to this older way of being. It's attracted to, or those people who represent that creative class are attracted to this new way of trying to get things done. And yes, it is more cooperative and inclusive. And yes, it does open doors to people who otherwise have not been part of the discussion historically. And there's a kind of dismissal of things that are otherwise seen as sort of token. I mean, tokenism really comes down to putting down a kind of marker and saying, there, that's our contribution to that issue. Or there's our simplistic answer to that question. But we have the opportunity to be a part of that discussion. Part of it is being right here in this conversation. Thanks for doing that. We'll be right back. Is there anything more Tallahassee than Tasty Pastry Bakery? More fresh, more original, more this is why I love this town kind of delicious? I don't think so. You know, they've been in business since 1963, working through the night to be ready the next morning with muffins, coffee cakes, bread and pastries, and my personal favorite, fresh-made bagels and Lucky Goat coffee. Yeah, it helps get me out in the morning. And they deliver to the many restaurants, clubs, and coffee shops that serve their bread, muffins, and quiche. Never stuffy, never stale, just Tasty Pastry Good. It's the perfect blend of world-class talent, pure, simple ingredients, and down-home Tallahassee family tradition. Maybe they should call it Tasty Tally Bakery, but then why mess with something that's been working for 55 years? You know, you want something fresh and fantastic? There's a Tasty Pastry just waiting for you in the Market District on Market Street, 6:45 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. You want to know more? They're online at tastypastrybakery.com or call them at 893-3752.
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So I have Russell Dawes with me here. Russell, how are you?
I am wonderful. Thanks for having me back.
The most handsome, the most intelligent, the most erudite, well-informed director of the Tallahassee Museum that I've ever known. Wait a minute. You're the only one I've ever known. So,
well, I was wondering, was there somebody here with me?
Backhanded you're describing. Compliment, yes, right. And on this occasion, you come and tell us about Swamp Stomp, which in and of itself, it's just fun to say. Come on, everybody say it, Swamp Stomp. And that happens tonight, or this afternoon going into the evening, starts at 4 o'clock.
That's correct.
At the Tallahassee Museum. Now, many of you are members of the museum, and if you're not, well, you really ought to be.
We can fix that.
We can fix that very easily. And you should think in terms of not just your own family, but which is a good place to start, but think about the ways in which this museum contributes to us at large, to a lot of families, school kids that come and get to learn about our own history, our agrarian history, our roots as such, agriculturally, regionally. You folks have gone the extra mile, I think, over the years in trying to bring us a real life presentation, you know, from the blacksmith to the typical
wood stove cooking,
general store, the wood stove cooking, and then those buildings, the architecture, the house that you had moved there, and it remains as
Bellevue.
National Register. It's a remarkable contribution. Some people still say the Junior Museum, which was its beginnings, but that's kind of like talking about Yankee Stadium back in the 1800s. I mean, it's just not the same animal.
No.
The Tallahassee Museum brings us this event today, the Swamp Stomp. There's a lot of fun in that, and there's a lot of great food. There's a amazing lineup of talent. Dylan Ragpicker Allen starts at 4 o'clock, and towards the end of the evening, you've got Del Suggs rounding it out there at 8 o'clock. And in between, all of these remarkable musicians. When you think of how this contributes, what comes to mind?
Well, I mean, starting with what you were just saying, I mean, the museum needs to be reflective of our region, our community. And as we were talking earlier, Tallahassee is growing. Mm-hmm. It's changing. It's becoming more sophisticated. I think the museum has to stay so relevant to our community and reflective of our community. Yes, we present that agricultural history.
Yeah.
But we pick up from there and continue on up to the present day. And if we're doing our job right, we're using that history and our environmental science, the wildlife, to help prepare people for the future.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about just living in the past.
Right,
it's
right.
How can we learn from it?
You know, it's remarkable.
How do we reflect our community?
That's the part
that's
that
right.
I find most interesting, because when we think of a museum, you think of this archive. So you're always looking in the rearview mirror. You're always looking at the past. But your organization says our past is helping us see our future.
Yeah, it's the key to the future. I mean, if we're not relevant, if we don't offer things that are meaningful to people living here in Tallahassee today, we're going to become history. And it's critical for us to stay contemporary, to talk about current issues, to talk about how we can help people have better lives, better lifestyles, and ensure that our environment of the future is a healthy one.
And here comes the Swamp Stomp as
one
of many, folks, many of these sorts of events that go on out there throughout the year. This is a great way for you to jump in if you haven't done this before. Russell, I'm quoting you here, where we have visitors from all over the region, and I'm going to argue there might be those from around the country who are visiting us during this time of year, and they're going to be out there enjoying this event's festivities. Hours of eclectic music, frosty beverages, beautiful location there at Lake Bradford. Man, what a great way to spend a Saturday afternoon, evening. The artists that you are presenting us, and here's the one that I thought really, I mean, of course, Del Suggs. Everybody loves and knows Del. Mimi Hearn.
Oh, what a treasure.
I mean,
her and Mike.
Real
together.
Tallahassee, baby.
Yeah. Well, and people don't realize she had a career in Nashville as well.
Yeah.
And Mike is a tremendous harp player. And the thing about almost every one of those musicians is they really believe in giving to the community.
Mm.
We are not paying a single musician to play.
They're volunteering their talents.
They're doing it because they believe in what the museum does. You know, the type of music we're presenting, from bluegrass to folk rock to country, is all part of our cultural heritage.
Wow.
And it's critical the museum be a place that people can come and celebrate that heritage. You know, I'm a big believer in live music.
Yeah.
And I think Tallahassee has one of the most creative, talented music communities anywhere.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it gets a little hidden under the basket. We are challenged with venues, and they're challenged with business. But I don't know that Austin, Texas has that much more on us in terms of musician. And when we do the Swamp Stomp and highlight those people, you know, we're a family place.
Yep.
We're hoping to turn future music lovers on to what we have here in Tallahassee.
You know what?
And support the people that present us
I look
with
at
the
this,
richness of culture.
And I see the cross-representation of the music. You're going to have your Trail Break Cafe open. You're going to have a cash bar for those 21 and older. If you're a member of the museum, we talked about membership. Well, it's free for you, and then kids 3 and under are free, as well as active duty military personnel and their immediate families included in the general ticket purchase on the day of the event, right?
Yeah.
Is that how that works?
See, we do not change our price. You get into Swamp Stomp tonight
for the same price.
And enjoy not only this tremendous lineup of musicians, but all the other features the museum has to offer.
Yeah.
You know, up until closing hours, the zip line will be open. You can be up in the trees listening to the music.
I like that idea, too.
You know, our wildlife displays will be open.
Excellent. It all happens this afternoon on into the evening. Starts at 4 o'clock. If you do want to get on the zip line, you need to get your tickets no later than 5. They're gonna continue selling the zip line tickets, or the tree-to-tree adventure, sorry.
That's right.
Through till 5 o'clock, but be sure to take this in. Russell, On behalf of Tallahassee, thank you.
Well, thank you, Brian, for what you do.
For what this means to us. Folks, you stay with me. I've got more coming up with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Super Signs. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic. You know, something clever. But that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Super Signs is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Super Signs. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs, too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Well, June 1st marks the beginning of hurricane season for 2018, all the way through the end of November. And we have done our very best. We can always do more. No doubt about that, but our mission here is to help you and I be prepared for that whole period of time when hurricanes are more likely, yes, and to extend that even further to say we need to be prepared for severe weather all year long. And so we've brought back to the mic our very good friends, Kevin Peters. He is the I think he's like in charge of everything over there at the county. They finally just kind of threw up their hands and said, well, just let Kevin run it. It's a lot easier. And he's the head of emergency management for Leon County. And in his dress whites, looking like a rock star, Chief Jerome Gaines, who has been taking care of the good men and women at Tallahassee Fire Department and doing his best to take care of us. How are you, Chief?
I'm good.
Kevin, it's good to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having us this morning.
It's a pleasure, yes. And always a pleasure. And you guys have been consistently trying to keep us all better prepared, but I think you've also done a better job, if I may say so, at communicating that. You know, it's one thing to say, well, we've got all our plans in place, and we've got all these folks on our side that work out of this center over here on Easterwood, and that in and of itself is remarkable. I mean, the coordination now really takes your breath away when you look at how well you all are communicating, we'll say it internally, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But then here comes the county and the city to say we need to do a more effective, more efficient, more pointed job of getting through Brian's, you know, fleshy tablets over here. Get me to think through the issue. And that can be something as simple as a smoke alarm, right, Chief?
Right, yeah.
So when we talk about fire, let's get started there, because this is the world that you are, a big part of your world that you're dealing with. Here we have Tallahassee in the summertime, lightning capital of the South. A lightning strike on a house can, in many cases, will start a fire.
Correct.
And if I'm asleep in my bed and I don't have smoke alarms in the attic, that thing could be cooking for a while before I even know it's happened.
True. That's true.
When you look at that level of awareness, that kind of preparedness, what do you guys do to try to get us to think past the more obvious stuff?
Well, I mean, it's the same as we do with emergency management, talk about hurricane season and so forth. It's just telling people, trying to educate people on thinking outside the norm. I mean, who would think that, why would I need a smoke detector in the attic? Well, okay, if you have a lightning strike, the fire can burn for a long time before you see that it's on fire. And by then, it could be too late. So it's through education, and communication. Just talking to people and reminding people that you always have to be prepared. And there are things you can do that are really inexpensive to make sure you're safe. Smoke detectors, very inexpensive.
And if I'm not mistaken, smoke and heat tend to rise.
Correct.
So if it's in the attic, it's not necessarily coming down into my bedroom right away.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So
by then, I mean, you know, structurally, the house is beyond, it's damaged. Yeah. And it could be a situation where you have, you know, you start to have this material fall down on you and you become trapped. And then, you know, it just doesn't get better.
Right. No, it doesn't get better. In fact, when I was a kid, we experienced that. Thankfully, we didn't lose the house. Mm-hmm. My dad was the hero of the evening, grabbed a garden hose. And by the time the firefighters got there,
right.
The one guy looked at my dad and said, if you hadn't gotten it exactly when you did, mm-hmm. it was getting into the roof of the house,
right.
It would have been gone.
Right.
And that's the other thing that people don't realize is if it has gotten that far,
man,
the firefighters are there to get you out,
right.
And to keep other houses from right. being damaged. But that house may be beyond.
Right.
I mean, it can very quickly accelerate. So, Kevin, you're not out there putting out fires. You're out there trying to light a candle
for the
rest of us so we can think, mm-hmm. wait a minute, how do I stay prepared even when it's something as subtle as a power outage
mm-hmm.
and I've got somebody at the house who may be on a respirator or, you know, some kind of a medical support device, right?
Yeah.
And I don't have a backup generator at my house, right? So what are you doing to try to get me to think through those issues?
Right. And Brian, as you know, disasters tend to know no season in the state of Florida.
They don't take a holiday.
No, you know, we can have the spring severe weather or not so much here in the Tallahassee area, but in the state, mm-hmm. the spring, we also have wildfires. We get into the rainy season of the late spring, early summer, and then where we're at now, hurricane season, yeah. and it goes all year long. So the key is having that family plan, you know, thinking about mm-hmm. these different hazards that can happen, whether it's a natural hazard or like we talked with Chief Gaines, that something happens inside the house, a fire. Think about the things that could happen in your home. Develop mm-hmm. that plan so as these things happen, you know, if we're watching the weather and we see there may be a storm coming, you start going through that family checklist of, okay, now it's time. Here are the things we need to consider. Along with that plan, having that disaster supply kit, all the things you will need to make sure that everybody in the family stays comfortable, whether it's, you know, the mom and dad or the elderly family members that may live with you and have some care issues, or down to the children and even your pets. You want to make sure you consider everybody.
That's another important point, too. Yeah. Wait a minute. What happened to Jack the Beagle? You know,
mm-hmm.
oh, my goodness. Yeah. He's back in the garage.
Yep.
Did anybody remember to grab Jack?
Right.
If in fact I'm paying attention,
mm-hmm.
it seems to me the county is doing a good job right. with these buckets,
yep.
for example. You talk about an emergency prepared kit.
Yeah.
Yeah. The buckets are a big part of that.
Right.
Right.
And that's something we started back in 2015. It wasn't a precursor to hurricane season that year. We did it in September as part of National Preparedness Month.
Yeah.
We did our first bucket event.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That year, we only gave out about 100 buckets or so. And I think we had a few left over. We were able to distribute some to some of our local area nonprofits that serve yeah. some of our vulnerable populations. But the following year, 2016, before Hermine, we amped it up, and I think we offered 300 buckets, it was, and a little more promotion, and we had pretty good turnout.
Good.
We gave away all the buckets through just this last Saturday, June 2nd, at the North Florida Fairgrounds, the biggest event we've had yet, over 800 buckets, well, 800 buckets given away, probably nearly 2,000 people in total came through the doors, you know, as families, and to start their quest on preparedness.
That's got to feel good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you drive up and the event starts at 9 and it's 6:30, you got people lined up the street, people paying attention.
And because you have been consistent at trying to get this out
right.
in front of us, you start to build that momentum, the reputation for, hey, that's something we need to put on our calendar, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Tallahassee Prepared promotion that we started years ago, we started very humbly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had a couple of sponsors and do whatever
right.
we could with that. And it has grown remarkably to where we've got tens of thousands of dollars
mm-hmm.
committed just to advertise the idea. Think through
right.
that emergency
yeah.
plan. You know, here's the website, TallahasseePrepared.com.
Right.
Great resource because it directs them back to
yeah.
you and all of the other emergency agencies, mm-hmm. Red Cross, all
yeah.
of them, even city.
Yeah.
So looking at it from the perspective you have, you've
right.
come to this community, you kind of look around and go, hey, well, what are we doing about that? And what are we doing about this? It's been several years. What, four years now. Are you happy? Have we made some progress? Where are we on that scale in your head?
And taking nothing away from where I came from, but I can be honestly, I can say this, is that there, you know, you had those types of disasters and emergencies, obviously, ice storms, tornadoes, snowstorms, floods.
Yeah.
And not that we weren't prepared or they weren't prepared, comparing it to how things are done here, it wasn't, there it was incident specific. They geared up for the incident. Kevin and working with Kevin in this community, it's 365 days a year preparation. It's constantly to put that, keep pushing that message that people have to be prepared. And there's the big difference.
Yeah.
From what I see in when I was in Indiana versus coming here.
Right. Talking with Chief Jerome Gaines here, Kevin Peters with Leon County Emergency Management. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be right back.
At Gaines Street Pies, their sauce is no secret. In fact, just about everybody knows their imported San Marzano pizza sauce has made them famous. Two Tallahassee guys wanting to make the best pizza in town. They mashed flavors together that had never been seen on a pizza before. And they just kept working until they had the very best. Using all fresh ingredients, real sliced bacon, fresh made ranch, and homemade meatballs. Recipe by recipe. So less than a year later, they opened Midtown Pies on 5th Avenue in Midtown. Now they're opening their third location on Capitol Circle Northeast at Easterwood. Two guys who got famous by making great pizza with San Marzano sauce and the best ingredients. And made it great for all of us who really want the best pizza in town. Check it out. Gaines Street Pies, now with three locations. Who knows? Maybe you'll get famous. Online at GainesStreetPies.com.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we're back and we're talking with Chief Jerome Gaines, Kevin Peters, being prepared, staying prepared. It ain't a one-time thing. It's an everyday thing. And it's about us trying to imagine what we haven't yet thought about. That's where I think the county can help us, because I know you've got in place some technological things. You've got an app that we can put on our phone. Tell us a little bit about that side.
Yeah, so Leon County, we following Hermine and going into Irma, we updated our Citizens Connect app. It's an app that had been in place prior to storms, but it was more service reports, you know, pothole on a county road or a sign leaning over, maybe a low limb. You could report it through that and get activity from our county public works to go out and take care of the issue.
Gotcha.
Following Hermine, we realized we could do more with that and add the emergency functionality to it. So now download the app. It's available on the Google Play and Apple's App Store.
Yeah.
It's still a two-way communication. You can still make the reports, let us know what's going on out there. But when you sign up, it'll do push notifications for key events, whether it's severe weather alerts or if we've opened a sandbag site before a disaster or let you know that shelters are open.
Right.
Any real key information that the community need to know, we can do a push on it. When you're inside the app, again, you can make those reports if a tree has fallen on a road or something like that. And it also links you into our emergency information portal, our website we've had for a number of years, where all of our critical emergency information gets posted during a disaster.
That's an interesting question in terms of response times, right? That's always another critical part of this whole thing. And I'm sure, Chief, that this is one of the issues that just kind of keeps you up at night thinking about how do we, if we're talking about improving our game.
Right.
You can have all the people, all the gear, everything in the world, but if we're not delivering service within that critical period of time, man, it's killing us here. What do you guys do to work that side of it?
Well, I mean, the city has something similar to the county through Digitally,
similar
app where you can report different emergencies and get information. You know, as far as what we're doing, we're bringing, I mean, obviously technologies in the fire service. We have provided mobile laptops to our units as they respond so they can, you know, they can enter when they're going en route, so forth,
Very cool.
Return to service.
Right.
Provides them information, updated information on the call as they're receiving that additional information from the caller. We are now looking at, or we're going to provide tablets for our officers as well when they respond to medical calls. So they can get that information in real time and so forth and be able to enter it into the system. And we do the same thing with our people in prevention when they go out to do building inspections. They do it all through the tablet now. So technology is, you know, it's constantly revolving and improving, and we will continue to adopt it.
I remember you telling me here the last time we talked, I think it was, we were talking about, you know, if you could have anything you wanted, what would you add on to? And technology was a big item. The other was a facility, right. Build another fire station.
Oh yeah, I mean we're always looking and asking for that because the county's growing, and you know, we cover 702 square miles. We have 16 stations.
702
square miles.
And two square miles.
That's a lot.
That's
of
a
territory.
Big footprint,
right? So we recognize through. We've had a GIS study done, which we knew anyway, but it confirmed what we already knew, that we do need to add additional stations.
So
we're going to continue to push.
So
for
we're
that.
Stretched, is what
right.
you're trying
we're
to say.
We're going to continue to push for that.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to stop.
Yeah. So, well, apparently we're not going to stop growing. So.
But you know what drives that? You know, people. It's just like with anything. You know, people don't like to pay for something if they don't use it.
Yeah.
And as I tell people all the time, you know, you pay for health insurance, car insurance, life insurance, all those insurance policies, and for that peace of mind. And it's the same with the fire
when
system.
You say, well, we're always pushing for that, what does that look like? I mean, like, are you picking up the phone and saying, okay, where's my money? Where do I?
No, I mean, you know, the way we're
well,
funded.
I would.
So,
well,
but
my
the
approach.
Way we're funded, it's just a matter of having conversations with the powers to be to say, look, here's the data that shows that, you know, we're responding to 702 square miles.
Right.
Here's our response times. Here's what the national averages should be.
Read the numbers.
Right. And the reality of it is that that's not enough. And because here's the thing. You can't put a price on a human life. Would we agree?
I certainly
agree. And that old saying, seconds count, that's
right.
true.
Especially when it's my life.
Right. And I get it. I'm a taxpayer. And people don't realize that, but I'm a taxpayer as well. But what I do realize is this, that everybody has to pay the appropriate share to make sure that when I need that assistance,
yeah.
it's there for me.
Yeah.
It's that simple. Nobody likes to pay for it, but it's one of those things that it's nice to have that peace of mind.
If I am a homeowner and I'm listening to you this morning, give me the five things I need to think about as I go through this hurricane season.
Five things. Do you
or
have a? Yeah,
three.
Well, I think I might have five
or
for
four.
You. Yeah, I'll try for five. I'll try
we're
for
going
five
for the bonus round.
All right.
Here.
So again, ding, 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 you know, preparedness. Do you have your family's plan? Do you have your disaster survival kit?
Yeah.
Finances. Have you talked to your insurance agent to make sure your coverage is good, is sufficient? Should you run into it? Do you have enough coverage? Do you have the right coverage?
Right.
If you live in a flood zone, you know, you want to make sure you've got flood insurance. And
right.
as we saw in Houston, a lot of places that were not in flood zones flooded. Anywhere mm-hmm. it rains, it can flood, particularly in these tropical events.
Yeah.
Look into flood insurance.
That's two.
Yeah, that's two. So,
what do you say, Chief? You got any for us?
Preparedness, insurance. Make sure, as he said, not just being prepared, but do you have a plan?
Yeah.
Can you provide for, because a lot of times the people that work in the EOC are obviously city and county employees, and we have families, so we have to provide for their safety when we can go, and that way we can focus on the task that needs to be
yeah.
done at hand.
Yeah.
So you got to have, beyond prepared, have a plan, a backup plan.
Okay. There's your plan, and then there's, if that
right.
plan fails, what's
right.
my next plan?
Yeah. It's yeah. one thing to have a bucket and so forth mm-hmm. and be prepared
right.
to say for 72 hours we need
right.
to be self-sufficient. But the other thing is to know your neighbors.
Yep.
To communicate with your neighbors
yeah.
and realize that there are people in that neighborhood that have specific needs and be able to work together.
Right. Maybe walk yeah. around the house
right.
and check
yep.
out.
Yep.
Tree limbs.
Right.
Do I have fire alarms in
That's
the
it.
Attic? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right.
That, smoke
detector. Protect your home.
Right.
Yeah, all those things you mentioned. You know, go through the in interior. You know, smoke
mm-hmm.
detectors. No weather
fire
radio.
Extinguishers,
fire
right?
extinguisher.
In the house.
Right.
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 Yeah.
And then do the 360 on the outside. You know,
okay.
is there any loose debris in the yard that could get whipped up by the winds and blown at it? And
yeah.
check for diseased or dying trees that may need to be either cut back or cut down.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was pretty good. On short notice. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank
this
you.
Is very helpful, and we're glad that you're doing well, and glad that you, even though you don't like shepherd's pie, that was the thing I was going to add, too, by the way. The chief
wow.
does not like, so on that list of being prepared, be nice to the chief. Just write that in there because you want TFD to show up. If you
They'll show up. Just because I don't like Shepherd's Pie, they'll still show up.
Well, I'm just saying. It always helps to be friendly with your firefighters. You know, don't be mean to these people because, you know what, they may be dragging your butt the next time you look around. Folks, I love these guys. I hope you know that the whole community is blessed to have them. And we appreciate you spending some time with us this morning.
Yeah.
You carry on and keep us prepared, will you?
We'll do.
All right. Just do the job.
It's always a pleasure coming to talk
to
you.
Oh, yeah, of course it is.
You're so easy.
Here we go. Finally.
There you go. There it is.
So, gentlemen, thank you both for being here. Thanks for making this portion of the show as informative and encouraging and directive as it is. Anytime you're here with us, we appreciate it. Folks, that's what I've got for you in this portion of today's show. Second hour is coming up right after this break. You stay with me.
Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widen Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widen's way of doing business for over 70 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best, like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widen is known for taking care of business. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
The most talked about topics in town, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're here. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, your most favoritist radio show on the planet. Well, it's the favorite of many, and I come across some of you folks out there from time to time who will generously offer your condolences and some appreciation. And I know I never assume anything because remember who you're dealing with here, what you've got to work with. But be that as it may, we are pledged to trudging onward and bringing you what Tallahassee is talking about this week, as best we can determine that. News of the day, lots of happenings around about. We had Russell Dawes with us in the first hour talking about Swamp Stomp. For those of you who may be unfamiliar, good opportunity to get to know how Tallahassee Museum contributes to the old and the new all in one breath, right? So the museum as such ties us intellectually and experientially with our agrarian past, but in its contributions to our understanding of where we are now and where we're going, it continues to be a source for education. It was really started as an educational enterprise, right? So those who originally formed the museum had that in mind. And they've endeavored to maintain that as sort of the downbeat that they are in large part responsible for helping us and our kids, school kids, learn more. Well, this Swamp Stomp, by extension, is a sort of then display of that, the old, the historic, the traditional, with a lot of contemporary contributions from local musicians. Is this not the coolest thing in the world? Well, which is today, starting at 4 o'clock, goes from 4 to 9 today, over there at the Tallahassee Museum. Grounds will be filled with musical performances, including Dylan Ragpicker Allen and Little Grizzly Hot Tamale. These are some of the folks that you're going to hear. Mimi Hearn and Mike Pilecki, they'll be out there. Panhandle String Trio, Brian Bowen, or Bowen, I think it is. And then the great, the one and the only Del Suggs will be on at 8 o'clock and perform his saltwater music. considered to be a pioneer of the trop rock. Yeah, cool stuff. The museum's Trail Break Cafe will be serving tasty treats. As always, cash bar will also be available for guests 21 and older. They're going to be selling tickets for the Tree to Tree experience. That's their zip line Tree to Tree experience. Now, they will cease at 5 o'clock will be the last time that you can buy tickets for Tree to Tree. So they're going to cut that off at 5 o'clock. So be mindful of that, that if you plan on doing that while you're out there this evening for the Swamp Stomp, well, you can get your tickets for Tree to Tree, but you have to do that before 5 o'clock or by 5 o'clock. Presenting sponsor is the Tallahassee Democrat. Program is also proudly sponsored in part by Rogers Gunner Vaughn Insurance, RAGS, and Yelp Tallahassee, Florida Division of Cultural Affairs, Tri-Eagle Sales, all kinds of folks in there. Leaf Filter, AT&T. Another characteristic of this town in that we are collectively benefited by these number of businesses and organizations. Visit Tallahassee among them. COCA, the Council for Culture and the Arts, City of Tallahassee. Everybody comes together on stuff like this. That's how it works. And you see it happen all the time. Collectively doing more for us than what we could see happen if only one or two folks participated. If one or two companies come together, it's okay. But when you get this kind of collective thrust, you have a kind of collective will, critical mass, perhaps. It goes on. And it's not just a one shot. It's an annual event. It becomes something that becomes or has become for us part of the fabric, part of what we've experienced. And we've seen some of that come by way of some of these new folks, some of these new efforts. The Word of South Festival is a good example of that. The Chain of Parks Art Festival, another good example of that, where you find people coming together around an idea that is moving us beyond the old. You know, if the old Tallahassee is, let's say, springtime Tallahassee Festival and, you know, one or two new news outlets, well, that's what's changing. There is a whole lot more coming our way, because you have this kind of collective desire. There's a will among people and companies and organizations to create something that is particularly characteristic of this time in which we live. Another example of that comes by way of Danny Bedrosian. And he's going to be with me here in this second hour. Danny is one of these folks that made his way to Tallahassee now over 15, 16, 17 years ago, simply because he wanted to perform with George Clinton, who was already here, had been here for a while, set up his studio here. And for these last number of years, Danny has toured with George Clinton. And in doing so, he has performed around the world, bringing their brand of music, which we are able to bring you on our own station, Moose Magnificat. And then he stepped up and said, hey, I'd like to be able to do my own radio show. We'll call it Danny on Everything. So we're going to talk with Danny about his show and all that it brings to us and to the world, because it's on Moose, which is, of course, because it's internet-based, available anywhere in the world, and the shows are archived for you. So it has that sort of evergreen, if you want, or at least ongoing accessibility. Very remarkable stuff. And, you know, very simply, Carl and I agreed, he brings to us these very interesting guests, people that he has come across here in Tallahassee, people who are ethnomusicologists, right? People like Michael Bakken over there at FSU. And in that conversation, we find out that this is a man who has spent his career researching the music of Bali and all that that represents culturally to the world of music. And I mean the world at large. And right here in our own town, Danny has the foresight and the insight to bring him to the mic. But the best thing to do is just keep checking in there at moosemagnificat.com. So that's coming up here in the second hour of the show, this conversation with Danny. For those of you who have been following some of our other guests, like Paloma Rambana, well, we're going to have Paloma with us next week, and she has a new book out entitled Paloma's Dream, in the subtext, The True Story of One Girl's Mission to Help Kids Inspire Activism and Survive Middle School. Indeed. Paloma Rambana, who graced the cover of Tallahassee Family Magazine here some many months ago and has been a guest on the show before. Well, this young lady has been around. We're going to find out in the weeks ahead here. I guess it'll be next Saturday. We'll find out more about her travels and her accomplishments. Wonderful thing that she's done here in getting this book published. Remarkable for a person who had a simple idea, Paloma's Dream, written with Hillary Ring, by the way. Folks, that's what I have for you here at the moment. Stay with me. I've got Danny Bedrosian standing by. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. You can find us online at TallahasseeTalks.com or check us out on Facebook anytime, and we'll be looking for you. Stay with me.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
I've got Danny Bedrosian. He has been coaching me the last few minutes here just to make sure I said his name correctly. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Brian.
Bedrosian, for being with us today.
It's my pleasure.
In fact, you certainly don't need any introduction from me. I mean, people know you, love you, have for a long time.
Thank you.
If you are just waking up to the massive amount of talent this guy carries around with him, been playing with George Clinton for, 15, 20 years now?
16 years.
16 years. We've lost count.
Yeah.
It's been just. And he is a road hound. I mean, this is a guy who spends, I don't know, 363 days a year out there knocking it down. And that in and of itself is a challenge. But when you are working with somebody as overwhelmingly gifted as George Clinton, and who in and of himself is undefinable,
right?
You're at a loss. There's no way that you can really put any kind of label or definition or explanation. It just doesn't work. So listening to you talk about that over the many years you've been with him, you just go, right? You just get on board and go.
Yeah.
And hold on for dear life.
Yeah.
Musically and in every other way.
Yes.
Here you are for just a short time with us. And that's why I wanted to snag you, so we could have this conversation about your career and about what's going on now. Because one of the big questions, I suppose, is what's going to happen when George Clinton says, I'm done.
Right.
How do you guys, do you talk about that among yourselves?
We recently started talking about it because George had announced quite recently that he's announced his retirement tour, or his last time on the roads, so to speak, supposedly.
Yep.
And, had a meeting with the band. We had a 26-way conference call. It was the most hilarious thing I've,
how do you keep track of who's on the phone?
It was incredible, actually. I've never done a conference call with more than like four people in my life. 26 of us, each one of us calling in one at a time, you know, like Danny Bedrosian, Greg Thomas, Lodge Curry. Like, we're all just like coming in like, hey. And everybody had to speak one at a time. And it was actually quite good. It was quite constructive. That's when it had been announced that he's announcing his, you know, retirement, yeah. So to speak.
Yeah.
And, but that Parliament Funkadelic is going to continue on the road,
yeah.
Because this is a 63-year institution.
Amazing.
And
63 years that this
group has been
show has been out there on the road.
Yes, and it's
all
many,
over the world.
Millions of incarnations in hundreds of countries.
No doubt, and has inspired
countless generations.
I mean, and musicians who have come behind him and said, oh man, I mean, can you name even, think of the names of people who come to mind,
mm-hmm.
that George Clinton has, mm-hmm. inspired with his music,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. From
Prince,
yeah.
Michael Jackson.
Sure. Red Hot Chili Peppers, all the rappers, all the dance music people, and then today even people like Childish Gambino and Kendrick Lamar and Mark Ronson, all these big hit makers, and all, yeah. You know, it's just, yeah. on and on.
Yeah.
Going back since the 50s.
So what we know is that this is irreplaceable in that way. He is irreplaceable.
His cult of personality, his place on stage is an irreplaceable. He is an irreplaceable, or as I say, unclonable sort of
yeah.
entity.
Yeah.
I think that being said, the band's continued existence,
yeah.
Is not infringing upon him being there necessarily.
We have life of our own,
yep. so to speak, but only because he was able to breathe that life into, historically speaking. I mean, I would like to say, because he's always been the leader.
Sure,
nobody else has ever been the leader of this. You know, he's never been in anybody else's band. something that a few of us were talking about one day, his bass player, Lodge, was like, George, you've never really been in anybody else's band, huh? And George was like, nah. We just kind of laughed about it. It's kind of funny. But
he was there, and they built everything else around
it. Yeah, because, yeah. you know, again, his poise, his the way he works, the way he's always had that hard
yeah.
work. Like, hard work is everything for him. You know what I mean? He's not afraid to get dirty and get down into whatever the work is, you know? So, with that in mind, he has built this institution so that eventually it could go on its own, I would assume.
In that way, is he demanding as an artist?
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
And in
make it work is the three words I've heard him say more than
make
anything.
Make it work.
Make it work.
And is that,
especially when you don't want to do it.
Yeah, right.
Make it work. Okay. So when we hear that, we're like, all right.
Does that make him difficult to work with?
No. Well, I mean, not for me, but I'm one of the people that has been working for him for 20 years since I was a teenager.
Right.
But I have found that when you work with people, you're either good at working with them or you're not, you know? And he was my hero, the artist I wanted to work with. So that allows you to make the sacrifices to at least get down to doing the work with him.
Yeah.
Then it comes down to, are you able to do the work? You know what I mean? And I think a lot of times people will say this is difficult, or this person is difficult, any person in any work situation, but I think it's usually because it's difficult for them. And that's not to say that it isn't difficult for me. All work can be hard work.
Sure.
But when you find that thing that you like enough that it makes the hard work feel easier than it should be, then that's the job that you're probably supposed to do.
Supposed to be doing.
You know?
Yeah.
I even asked George when I had him on my show, one of the questions I had asked him, if you weren't doing this,
I heard that.
What one job would you do? He had no answer.
He dropped the
radio
mic on
silence.
That one.
I've never heard. Like, I have never heard crickets. Him at a loss for words ever. He's always got something poignant and interesting to say.
And
he
your answer was perfect, because he said, "Well, I guess you've answered that question."
I said, "I guess you did the right thing. I said, you chose the right work."
What else would you imagine this person doing?
Right.
Certainly, he can't.
He can't. So.
Yet, for you, and by the way, thank you for referring to your show. I should have said this earlier.
No.
If you guys don't know this, Danny Bedrosian has his own show.
Yes.
And it's called Danny on Everything.
Yes.
It is amazingly
engaging, entertaining, funny, informative, inspiring. And they call Danny on everything because you just never know. From one episode to the next, yeah, I don't know what he's going to be talking about, right, or who he's going to be talking to, but it's always great. So,
thank you.
And the neat thing about your show is that it's episodic and it's periodic. It comes in like once a month,
and you have
another installment somewhere in the world because you've done a few of these from the road.
Yeah.
And thus far, it's been pretty cool. People are really, really licking their chops on this deal.
Oh, I appreciate it.
We're going to talk about that, speaking of chops, because we know that you've been playing at the Chop House.
Yes, nice. Nice transition.
On the bricks. I'm working that.
I like that.
So we're going to talk about that when we come back. You stay with me. I've got Danny Petrosian in the studio, the man. We'll be right back.
Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. That's the Merry Maid's way of keeping your home or office at its best. And it's what we have come to expect here at Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Our studios and offices always shine because Merry Maid's makes the difference, like they do for hundreds of offices and homes in Tallahassee. They'll do just the same, just for you. And they're right here, giving back to our community and giving you extra benefits, like saving you up to $400 on your first cleaning by giving you extra service, and saving an extra 10% when you mention Tallahassee Talks. Their website makes it really easy for you, too. You can schedule a cleaning and make a payment with just a few clicks, any day, any time, day or night, when it's convenient for you. Call Merry Maid's this week, 850-386-2205. That's 386-2205. Or find them online at merrymaids.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So here we are talking with Danny about Danny on Everything, talking about George Clinton, about your musical career that has spanned now more than 20 years, but because you started when you were like four.
Yeah, 33 years ago, 34 years ago, something like that.
Your parents were both very talented musicians and music educators. You and your sister or sisters.
Both my sisters, yeah.
You know, never had a choice, never had a chance.
Just went right into it.
They just threw you at the piano and said, "Don't come back until you've learned everything about this instrument," right? And you're like, play ball. Nice. No, you must practice. So we have to let Danny go here pretty soon because he's got to go practice.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is an amazing thing. When you talk about George Clinton's work ethic,
yeah,
you make me tired.
Oh.
I think about the fact that you're doing, what, 4, 5, 6 hours?
Every day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, boys and girls, listen to me when I say you think you have something worth doing. Is it worth it enough that you're going to perfect that thing, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to be this or that, how much of your life do you devote to seeing that you are the very, very best you can be every day?
Right.
I think that's called staying on top of your game.
Yeah, for sure.
It's right?
Yeah. And I think that what's interesting about it, too, is you also have to be sort of okay with the fact that every day while you're practicing, you're also thinking, "Why I don't sound good enough to have?"
Yeah,
why I'm practicing 4 hours a day.
That job at Sears is looking really good right now. Yeah, what am I doing?
It's the kind of thing where you have to be sort of okay with the fact that you're doing this much work every day, but it doesn't mean that you're like, "Ooh, I can tell that I've been doing this work. Wow, I sound better." You know that you're slowly, incrementally getting better all years, all days, all times, but it doesn't necessarily look or feel or sound like that to you.
I have heard that said about composers and visual artists and dancers that they're never satisfied.
Never. I am never satisfied with the way I sound, especially when I'm practicing, which is why I probably practice for so long. Which is funny to say, too, because I have friends, other musician friends and painter friends, artists, who sometimes watch me like come and hang out with me and watch me practice.
Yeah.
And they're like, Danny, the way you sound when you practice is, I'm like, what, terrible? They're like, no, it's so, it's like, this is what you do with, this is how you sound when you're practicing, like as if you're supposed to sound terrible when you practice. Like, well, to me, it sounds like garbage. So I'm glad that you're enjoying it. I'm just going to keep doing it. So, to, you know, to satiate this, this angry sort of thing, but it's the only way to keep going.
If you had to choose, I'm going to give you one of the, this is a Dan, this is a Danny question.
Nice.
All right. But if you had to choose one or the other, would you rather be writing, performing, or producing? You got to choose one.
Performing.
Yeah.
I was saying, I was trying to do it as fast as possible, so I didn't have to like think about it for too long.
Yeah.
Only because the way I write, I will write throughout the course of the year. You know.
Anyway.
Whenever a new album is done, I'm already halfway in the next one or two albums.
Right.
Producing, the same thing. If there's something that I really like or someone has approached me with something that I'm going to be producing, oh, this looks like a good a good prospect or whatever.
Yeah.
Performing is, for me, like breathing or eating. So for me, it has to be performing first because it is this... I've always been, like, even when I was just a, well, not just, but even when I was a concert pianist, when I was doing classical only, the sort of, you know, the idea that people had about me was, oh, he's this very sort of fiery performer, if you will. I liked the idea of performing on my instrument, you know, concert piano.
Right.
Say, it is, for me, absolutely no different on keyboards with George Clinton.
That's Parliament, an interesting question, too. When you are performing, is your motivation the same as your practice sessions? Okay, and here's where I'm going with that.
Okay, yeah.
So you're on stage, you're performing. Mm-hmm. Is your mission to target that audience and go, I'm going to knock you out of your seat? Or is it much more internal? It's, I'm going to play this music the way my heart says I got to play this music.
Yeah.
Or is it both?
I think that sometimes... No, it's the, actually, it's a brilliant question. Sometimes...
Well, well, in case
that, that, brilliant, Brian.
Okay,
brilliant.
Fine. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more brilliance right
end on top.
After this. Quit while I'm ahead.
But but when I'm practicing, sometimes I find myself in performance mode, which is a more solemn kind of feeling that I'll have. Right. But a lot of times, if I'm in performance mode when I'm practicing, it's because practicing in that moment is necessitated from a way I'm feeling, something that I'm. These days in my life, I'm quoting Fred Rogers more than almost anybody because my daughter, thank goodness, loves Fred Rogers more than anything.
He was a very wise man.
Very wise man. And he said something about, you know, when he was sad or angry, he used to go and play the piano and make him feel better.
Mm.
And that was me my whole life. When I was in college with all the dramatic college kid problems, when I was in high school with all the pubescent high school kid problems, all the way to now with any kind of problem, I go, I practice, and it is... It just releases everything, whether I'm in practice mode or performance mode, but it makes me feel more like a performer when I am in those modes. Because when I go and perform, to answer your question, when I'm performing with George or with my band with Secret Army or even my at the Chop House by myself, if it is about the performance first and foremost, I am going to take every sort of feeling that I am exhibiting in that moment, good, bad, ugly, and all of that is going to be characterized and exhumed and pushed out into my performance, almost especially with P-Funk when I perform with George.
Wow.
Just because I'm in my little world, I'm surrounded by my keyboard laboratory on stage, and it's just, this is my world. I'm on all cylinders. I'm feeling a certain kind of way, and I'm just pushing that, whatever that is, and it becomes something. Wow, Danny, you were really on one tonight. Yeah, well, I was feeling a certain kind of way. You know what
that's
I mean?
Right. Like, that's don't ask.
Yeah, exactly.
I just told you how I'm feeling for the last 2 hours. Right,
right? Exactly.
Yeah,
but it's cool because in that you're finding that I definitely have the performer's brain when it comes to that, like being on stage. A lot of people can't wrap their mind around with. Around the idea of, okay, I gotta psych myself into, or I'm too nervous to da-da-da-da-da. I think I got so nervous in the recital days that, like, all the nervousness is just gone, thankfully, and now I can just do what I'm supposed to do. Yeah, and that's why I think performing is the most important aspect of it to me. So deeply that I remember one time, about 2 years ago, somebody who wished bodily harm upon me, and I'll just say no more than that, was literally 1 foot on my riser, standing right next to me for an entire show, basically wanting to get me. Okay.
Whoa.
And I spent the entire show performing and for that person. I performed. I was like, oh God, I really want to give them a good show for this person that I'm not supposed to like. It's not supposed to like me. I literally transported the performance to that person. I wanted to make sure that this person who didn't like me got the best version of me by myself in the mix of the whole thing as possible. And after the show, I was like, gosh, that was weird. I just like basically transported the whole performance to this person's ears.
I mean, that
just
has,
so that they would like it. That so has strange.
Some amazing spiritual implications when you stop and think about
yes.
how transforming that was for you at that moment.
Yes.
And how transcendent that experience would be for any one of us mm-hmm. if we're faced with a circumstance that is not only
nerve-wracking,
difficult, but yeah. personally threatening.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Right, right.
Wow.
Yeah. Someone who did not like me. Who didn't.
I just thought you played the piano nice, you know?
why does it have to be so deep?
My God, man. Well, this is why you're here.
And
you
this
know,
is
to help
some years ago, too.
Better understand.
But it never left me. The fact that, like, this is so funny. I should be thinking, oh, why is this person near me? Or, oh, I wish they'd get away from me. They're ruining my performance. Instead, they fueled my performance, and my performance went towards them.
I have to
totally
tell you,
random.
those people that I know, and you're one of those people in my life over the many years that I've lived, who I consider artists in their own realm, have that common thread. A, that they're never satisfied with what they do.
Right.
They constantly look at the product itself. They're not really trying to blow anybody out of the water. They're more so concerned about the work.
Yeah.
You know, because they will not rest until they have gotten that accomplished that they want.
They're quality control soldiers.
Indeed. We're going to take I love that. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, stay with me. I've got Danny Bedrosian. This is a remarkable conversation. I'm learning so much.
Nice.
This is good. I hope you are too, folks. Stay with me. We'll be right back.
I want to take just a minute and tell you about Chelsea Salon. They are the official hair care salon and spa for Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. And yes, this is how I am able to bring to you my very best every week. Because, though you can't see me, I know whether I'm at my best, and I need all the help that I can get. So when I go over to see Mary Fannin and her crew, they are proficient in everything they do. Wow. Well, I don't think there's anything that has to do with my personal look and feel that they don't do. Here's one review I read recently. This is a guy here in Tallahassee. He says, I am so happy I found this place, having just moved from Orlando, where I had a wonderful stylist for 15 years. Chelsea is the bomb. Well, there you go, guys. So it's not just for the ladies. Check it out this week. Chelsea Salon and Spa, the official hair care and salon stylists for Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Well, if we can get through this last segment of the show without us just rolling over on the floor laughing, because Danny and I have this kind of bromance thing going on, I think, where we really admire each other,
yes.
We like each other's work, and, I mean, he's totally in another hemisphere than I am in terms of talent. Come on, yes, you are. Shut up.
I partially learned what I do on this show from watching you on Tallahassee Talks.
No, really? Seriously?
No, I don't accept that.
But I do know that you are this road warrior, and you are this person who is moved to bring your music wherever you go. And that means a lot, because there's places all over the globe. I think you're going off to Europe here in another week or so.
Less than a week.
Yeah. And then touring around the United States, going over to Europe. It's just astounding to me. And you've said before how much you really just like being on the road. It's a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't wear you out. That actually just sort of, you just kind of get in the groove and you just do it.
Yeah.
And you can't wait to get to the next performance.
Yeah.
I mean, for the based most on part, what you've told me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there are definitely things that wear me out on the road. Travel, the regular, I mean, you know, physically wear you out.
Human stuff.
Yeah, human
but
stuff.
But you're above that now, right?
Nice.
You're superhuman now, like, so it's okay.
With this upcoming tour in Europe, I think it's 17 shows in 19 days.
Yeah.
Which means
right
flight almost every day.
Oh my gosh!
If not every day,
you know what you are? You're a Marvel comic character. That's what it is, right, Carl? Am I right? Yeah, he's like an X-Men.
Yeah, we used to say that in P-Funk a lot of times. Say, oh, we're like the X-Men.
Yeah,
we say, oh, what's
float.
Your mutant
just
power?
Float.
Keyboards. That's my mutant power.
Man alive! And here you come back home, and the first thing you want to do is perform, and so you go up to Thomasville at this nifty little restaurant.
Yes.
The Chop House on the Bricks, right?
Yes.
Or not the.
No, that's
Chop.
It. Yeah, you got
yeah?
it.
Yeah, the Chop House on the Bricks.
Yeah.
So the Chop House, how did that all come about? How did you connect with these guys?
So Chef Matt used to work at the Root Cellar.
Oh, okay.
In Tallahassee.
Mikasuki Root Cellar.
Yep, which was owned by Ruben, who played in Two Foot Level. We all knew each other as musicians, and I used to do a piano set, more of like a, I don't want to say singer-songwriter, but it was more like I would sing R&B songs, Armenian folk tunes, oldies, jazz standards.
Cool.
A different set than what I do at the Chop House.
Of course. Okay.
Because it was more of like they have this microphone and the piano. They want you to sort of sing and play. It's something I've done my whole life. So I would do everything from gospel to blues to jazz, all kinds of stuff. It was a very diverse set. Chef Matt was the genius behind in the kitchen.
Very cool.
And his food blew my mind. And we used to hang out after the shows and be like, you know, because I was a cook for 12 years.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So I have this thing with chefs.
There's the
camaraderie with me.
Yeah.
And I look at good chefs as like musicians or artists.
They are,
to
in
me.
Fact.
And
culinary
and,
art.
And a lot of chefs, music is their life. So there's a great connection there.
A lot
there.
Of connection there.
And we stayed tight. And when he left and started his own restaurant in Thomasville, Georgia, at the Chop House on Broad Street, he called me pretty early in the opening of that restaurant. I think it was 2013.
Yep.
And he said, "Danny, I want you to come down and play." I'm like, "Well, you guys have a piano." Like, "Well, you have to bring a keyboard, bring your stuff." I'm like, "Okay." So my first couple nights there, I think I did sort of the same set as what I would do at the Root Cellar, but very quickly realized, oh, it's a different kind of ambiance. So I sort of had to develop my own set. I wasn't really basing it on anybody else.
Okay. Just didn't feel like it was fitting.
It wasn't fitting exactly.
The setting.
Yes, yeah. Right. So I started doing my classical stuff at that venue.
Right.
And because of the Chop House, I really started breaking my classical chops, no pun intended, out a lot more than I had in the past, at least for performance.
Yeah.
Other than stuff I do with George, because there's a lot of classical in the stuff we do with George.
Indeed.
Believe it or not.
Yeah, I know.
But at, you know, actual Beethoven, Bach, Mozart, Brahms, et cetera,
right.
I was doing that. I started doing almost all that at the Chop House, and now it's like 96%, if not more, classical music that I do there.
Remarkable.
But it also helped me get my regimen even more, you know, I started doing more hours of my practice regimen as a result of, oh, I got to get this ready for the Chop House.
For that, yeah.
And now my... I always make the joke, every band I play in has like the biggest discography of every band. And my solo sets at the Chop House are no different. I have now gotten to the point where I'm rotating somewhere around 580 different orchestral piano pieces.
You're kidding me.
So from medieval all the way to the postmodern stuff. From Bach all the way to, you know, Gretchaninoff and all these people.
When you're in town, how often do you get to play there?
When I'm in town, I... almost every other weekend, every couple weekends.
Okay.
It's usually one or two weekends a month, which is usually the full time that I would be in town. Yeah. So I don't actually go back there until October. This time was the longest I've ever gone without playing at the Chop House since it opened. At the Chop House, been like, ooh, this is such a different, like a really challenging set for someone because...
Right.
You're not necessarily, people aren't coming there to see you, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But more importantly, you're catering to them.
Yeah.
So the performer is always catering to the audience in some kind of way.
Right.
But in this way, you're really there to break the uncomfortable silences at dinner tables, to allow a slight conversation piece to you know, a very casual, you have become a very casual conversation piece when you do this kind of this kind of gig. However, I was trained to do this kind of gig because I did classical my whole life.
Blending.
But it's just very different than the concert pianist, because the concert pianist is this fortissimo, you know what I mean? It's this powerful thing that everybody is aimed towards, whereas the dinner classical pianist is there just for ambiance, just for texture, just for color. Luckily, I'm a synesthete, and I see colors when I play and hear music anyway, so I am able to approach the room and be like, oh, Schumann. We got to get the Schumann first. I know exactly what I should play first.
So the visuals in the space inform you as to...
Which I learned from George Clinton, by the way.
Interesting.
He is the master of that. And granted, like I said before, this gig is about as different from that as it could possibly be, but I still use things from it, like George's ability to read a room, to be able to tell what the first song should be. I do that almost every time, even with the Chop House, when I do my classical set. I walk in and I'll be like...
Who's here?
How's this look? How close is the closest person to me? What is the age demographic? Even just with classical music, I'll know that I'll be able to get away with or not get away with certain types of pieces and things based solely on the crowd themselves.
Huh.
And yeah, you are
astounding.
You're currying to a different sort of feeling. It's a very different type of performance. But I think the fact that it's so different is what the challenge that I enjoy. And I feel like I've gotten really good at it now, but it is a whole different type of experience.
Yeah, you're kind of good at it now. I'll go with that. He's my friend. That's what I tell people. I'm with him. Danny Bedrosian, our guest today, who is, in fact, a world-class musician. Don't let him hear that I said that, but it's true. And George Clinton and all of those that he works with are blessed to have you, my friend. I
thank
have to
you,
tell
Ryan.
You that, too.
Well, I'm blessed to have you.
Well, okay, then. Fine.
And you and Carl.
There we go back to the bromance thing again. This is all we can do for now, because Danny has to go and do other things and perform and travel around the world. But thank you, my friend. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
A pleasure. That's what I got for you this week, everybody. It's been a pleasure to have you along for the ride. We are the production of Alcom Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the luxurious studios of Moose Magnificat right here in Tallahassee. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee. Come talk to me.
At Gain Street Pies, their sauce is no secret. In fact, just about everybody knows. Their imported San Marzano pizza sauce has made them famous. Two Tallahassee guys wanting to make the best pizza in town. They mashed flavors together that had never been seen on a pizza before, and they just kept working until they had the very best. Using all fresh ingredients, real sliced bacon, fresh-made ranch, and homemade meatballs. Recipe by recipe. So, less than a year later, they opened Midtown Pies on 5th Avenue in Midtown. Now they're opening their third location on Capitol Circle Northeast at Easterwood. Two guys who got famous by making great pizza with San Marzano sauce and the best ingredients. And made it great for all of us who really want the best pizza in town. Check it out. Gain Street Pies. Now with three locations. Who knows? Maybe you'll get famous. Online at GainStreetPies.com.